The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Cindy Fowler from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from the Triangle Gardener Magazine, the North Carolina Extension Gardener e-newsletter, the State-by-State Gardening e-newsletter, Dave's Garden e-newsletter, and maybe from Jerry Baker's terrific garden tonics. And we'll start with Dave's Garden e-newsletter. Spring is the time of plans and projects. That was said by Leo Tolstoy. Saving bulbs in the spring to plant in the fall by Adina Dosen. Snowdrops, hyacinths, daffodils, and tulips are blooming in the spring and then just disappear. Later, when I dig into the flower beds for weeding or for planting summer flowers, I always find some bulbs. Should I bury them back in the ground? Definitely not. I better take the bulbs out and save them for planting in the fall. Trying to make a beautiful landscape in my garden, I learned about the perfect time when spring bulbs needed to be planted from my Dave's Garden friends. I've always been amazed about the hundreds of bulbs that each of them are burying in their gardens in the fall. I don't have a big garden, and that's why I only planted a dozen of bulbs when I first started my garden. I knew they will naturalize themselves, so I planned to thin them when they needed dividing. We have a saying in Romania, the count you make at home doesn't fit with the one from the market. And that's what happened with my bulbs. I planted them when all my plants were young, trying to make a beautiful landscape, considering the time of month when each of the plants bloomed. I had tulips along the alleys, some near the thuja, and others near the mums. But the thujas grew bigger and bigger, and the mums grew wider and wider. In a couple of years, some of the tulips were strangled by the mums, and others were shaded by the thujas. I knew I had to change my garden's landscape again. Changing one landscape solves the tulip issue. That summer, I needed to weed the grass from around the mums, but also to plant the echinacea seedlings I started from seeds. Since the grass had long and deep rhizomes and roots, it was a perfect occasion to dig it out, together with any bulbs I found in there, and then plant the seedlings in their place. I already had the spade. I tried to thin some of the mums, too, and in the process, more tulip and daffodil bulbs came out. After digging the bulbs out, another issue came up. What to do with the bulbs until fall? When I knew it would be perfect time for planting them, and they would come up in the following spring. I knew bulbs need some cold and just a few drops of water while they're dormant. Since I didn't want to keep watering them, I decided to force the bulbs to go dormant by keeping them in a plastic bag in the vegetable box of my fridge. I dug out all the tulip bulbs from around the thujas and saved them in the same way. I admit I had my doubts, but all turned out well, and the bulbs hibernated very well in my fridge. I'm now using the same method any time I am digging out some bulbs, as I know they will be fine in the fall. I have no worries, and just let the plastic bag with the bulbs in the fridge, and maybe just check on them from once in a while, when I remember. Starting a new spring garden. Most of my American Dave's Garden friends are planting the bulbs in late August, but since I am always late, I was late for that, too. August was hectic by caring for the vegetable garden and watering. September passed quickly, too, with the pickles. In October, I saw that the bulbs in the fridge had sprouted, so it sure was time I planted them. I found a perfect place for them where I won't have to dig them out too soon. I plan to make this place a spring garden with lots of tulips, hyacinths, and daffodils blooming all together. The spot is surrounded by roses and has a hardy hibiscus in the center. During summer, all those are almost covering my spring garden-to-be, which is perfect. My plan is good, at least for now, but who knows what will happen in the future. Maybe I'll have to change my garden landscape again and start a new spring garden in another spot. But for now, I'm enjoying my spring garden, and I'm trying to expand it more and more every year. Aren't bulbs amazing? And now from the NC Extension Gardener News e-newsletter. There are better options than using tires in the garden. By Lucy Bradley. Disposing of old tires is an environmental and economic challenge that has led to a variety of creative strategies for repurposing the treads into new, useful objects, including containers for children's gardens. While this does keep tires out of landfills, and it can be an inexpensive way to create a raised bed, there are some potential risks. Tires contain aluminum, cadmium, chromium, copper, iron, magnesium, manganese, molybdenum, selenium, and sulfur, as well as a high level of zinc. They also contain plasticizers and accelerators used during the vulcanizing process. In addition, rubber can also absorb heavy metals like lead. As tires break down, these toxic substances leach out, contaminating the soil, the plants, and leaching through storm waters into creeks and lakes. Over time, this could pose health risks for gardeners or those consuming the produce. Contaminants can be breathed in. They can also be absorbed through the skin or consumed. Young children are at higher risk. They are closer to the ground. They are more likely to eat soil. Dirty finger in the mouth. A vegetable not washed. A mud pie. They are more likely to have exposed skin. Diaper only. Shorts. Tank top, barefoot. And because of their small size, they are impacted by lower doses. Alternatives for raised bed construction are ACQ pressure treated wood, woods with natural rot resistance, or other non-treated woods, bricks, stone, concrete, or other recycled materials may be safe if they have not been exposed to lead paint, asbestos, or other chemicals. Simply mound the soil with no structure for the border. This is less expensive, brings in no potential contaminants, is more flexible, and can be beautiful. There is no need to use tires in the garden. There are other economical, environmentally sustainable options that have less potential for health risks. And from the State by State Gardening e-newsletter, new seed varieties for 2019 by Erica Jensen. Winter is prime time for seed catalogs. While others are watching the Super Bowl, I'm usually knee-deep in catalogs, obsessively planning for spring. When choosing varieties, I definitely look for organic seed, and here's why. First, the basics. Certified organic seed is harvested from plants raised without the use of synthetic chemicals. Further, the seed cannot be treated with fungicides or insecticides. It turns out that the seed business is very chemically intensive, and that's just plain bad for the environment. This alone should be reason enough to purchase organic, but there are some other reasons. Put simply, plants bred in an organic system are better suited to thrive in organic gardens, which might include more weeds and pests. Plus, plant breeders selecting organic varieties often put flavor at the top of the list of characteristics they breed for. A few programs are developing new varieties for organic growers, including Cornell University and the University of Wisconsin-Madison. If you are looking for a good local seed company, the Seed Alliance is a great place to start. New varieties for 2019. I spoke with representatives from Johnny's Selected Seeds, High Mowing Seeds, and Seed Savers Exchange to compile this list of some new and very promising varieties for the upcoming year. Benefine Endive, a frizzy variety with improved performance and less tip burn. The variety was sourced through Inza/Vitalis, a Dutch seed company that is a leader in the organic industry. Cool Customer, Pickling Cucumber. Early, uniform, vigorous, and tasty, and makes great pickles. Developed by Dr. John Navasio, it's an improvement over the former offering, Northern Pickling. Magic Lime Green Feverfew, developed by Oregon plant breeder Frank Morton. This is one of the few varieties of organic feverfew available. Galaxy Tomato. These cherry tomatoes were bred for flavor, but they also resist crackling and store well at room temperature. Supernova, a mini red Roma with yellow striping, is the brightest star in the constellation, while Midnight, a pear tomato, Comet, a red grape tomato, Sungrazer, an orange grape tomato, and Starlight, a yellow grape tomato, are also stellar. PLS 595 Shell Pea. This is the first organic selection of a tried-and-true shell pea used for processing. It has great flavor and productivity, with an average of 11 peas per pod. 2 to 3 feet tall, it does not need staking since the tendrils cling to each other, providing support. Pinwheel Marigold, an attractive combination of maroon and yellow. Pinwheel reaches 2.5 to 3 feet tall. It attracts pollinators and works well as a cut flower. An heirloom variety from the 17th century, this selection is well adapted to cold climates since it was grown and stewarded in the northeastern U.S. Wisconsin 55 Tomato, rescued from the USDA Seed Bank, this heirloom was rigorously selected from the original genetic stock for this variety. An old favorite, first developed by the University of Wisconsin and released in 1946. Waldenboro Green Neck Rutabaga. This heirloom rutabaga was reportedly salvaged off a shipwreck that occurred off the coast of Maine. But the story is just the beginning of a great variety with decorative purple leaves and an especially sweet flavor. Storing your seeds. Organic seed can be expensive to purchase, but if you store your seed correctly, you can use it for several years. Seed stores best under cool, dry conditions. I store mine in either the refrigerator or freezer. If you purchase pelletized seed, it generally only lasts a year. And now from the Triangle Gardener magazine, from their News for the Garden, the Year of the Dahlia. The National Garden Bureau has proclaimed 2019 as the Year of the Dahlia. So let's celebrate. Native dahlias found in the mountains of Mexico and Guatemala are the genetic source for the modern hybrid dahlias we grow today. The dahlia is a tuberous plant, a member of the Asteraceae. There are many species in a range of colors, sizes, and forms. Flowers can be as small as 2 inches in diameter or as large as 15 inches. The tubers can go directly into the ground in the spring when the ground is warm and there is little chance of frost. Or you can start the tubers indoors in good light about a month before planting time. Dahlias require a site with good drainage and partial to full sun. Most dahlias need to be staked to avoid falling over at maturity. Best practice is placing the stake prior to planting to avoid damaging the tuber and root system. Plant the tuber according to the package directions with the eye on the tuber facing up. The eye is the point on the shoulder or crown of the tuber from which the plant grows. If you are buying potted plant dahlias, simply transplant into a prepared garden bed or decorative containers. Slugs and Japanese beetles tend to like dahlias, but they are low on the deer's favorite list. And the birdhouses are back. It's that time of year again. The birdhouse competition returns to the J.C. Ralston Arboretum April 6th. If making birdhouses is not your thing, then looking at them should be. The creations range from barrels of laughs to studies in craftsmanship and beauty. Pack up your brood and join the fun April 6th from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Admission to the Arboretum's Ralston Blooms that day gets you in to see the birdhouses. It's free to enter a birdhouse in the competition. Plus, birdhouse builders receive a free ticket to attend Ralston Blooms. Register your birdhouse in advance, online or on-site, April 5th. Details for entering the competition are found at jcra.ncsu.edu or call 919-513-7005. 919-513-7005. And 40 years of growing. Master Gardeners of Wake County are celebrating 40 years of volunteer service to the gardening public. It all began March 1979 when 17 men and women gathered in Kilgore Hall at NC State University to organize the program and adopt the name Master Gardener. Wake County was the first county in North Carolina to organize a Master Gardener group and begin training volunteers. To celebrate this milestone year, a number of lectures and events were planned. On March 7th, Dr. David Gibby, founding father of the worldwide Master Gardener movement, shared his experiences and the history of the movement. He has a bachelor's degree in botany from Weber State University, and his master's and doctorate in botany were from Utah State University. On May 2nd, Dr. Richard Olson is director of the U.S. National Arboretum in Washington, D.C. Appointed to that position in May of 2015, Dr. Olson grew up in Raleigh and was honored by the NC State College of Agriculture and Life Sciences as an outstanding alumnus. He has a bachelor's degree in landscape design from NC State, his master's in horticulture from the University of Georgia, and his doctorate in horticultural science from NC State. November 7, the The final event will be a visual presentation of the 40 years, highlighting what has been accomplished and how the Wake County Master Gardeners organization has grown from 17 volunteers in 1979 to 184 in 2019. More events are planned throughout the year, including an art and craft show featuring works by the volunteers. For questions about the volunteers of Wake County or the events, contact Angela Hertzberg, membership coordinator at angertz@aol.com. Now some events coming up. We have Art in Bloom, March 21 through 24. Over 50 floral masterpieces interpreting art in the museum's collection, workshops, and special events at the North Carolina Museum of Art in Raleigh. And a Spring Garden Symposium on March the 23rd, 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. by the Cumberland County Master Gardeners Association with Tony Avent and Carol Reese. There is a fee and it includes lunch, but you need to pre-register. This will happen at the Ramada Plaza in Fayetteville, North Carolina. For more information, call 910-261-1091. 910-261-1091. And a gardening symposium, March 23rd, 8:30 a.m. to 1 p.m., Gardening for a Sustainable Future includes speakers and lunch, and there is a fee, and you need to pre-register. For more information, call 252-438-8188, 252-438-8188. This is by the Vance County Regional Farmers Market in Henderson. And day tripping to Rock Cliff Farm, March the 28th, 9 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. In 1983, the Neuse River was dammed, creating Falls Lake, which flooded about 70 acres of Rock Cliff Farm, named because of its unique geology and wildflowers. The farm now is a setting for plants and animals in natural habitats. There's a fee, and you need to pre-register. This happens at J.C. Ralston Arboretum at North Carolina State University in Raleigh. For more information, call 919-515-3132, 919-515-3132. And from the state-by-state gardening e-newsletter, here are a couple of events that are going on. March 23rd through the 31st in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, Forsyth Creek Week. Locations around Forsyth County. This annual week of events features many different events relating to conserving and appreciating local waterways. Most events are free, but some could require reservations. For more information, visit Forsyth creekweek.squarespace.com. And March 23rd through the 31st in Greensboro, North Carolina, Guilford Creek Week. Locations around Guilford County. Returning for a second year, this annual week of events has many different activities relating to conserving and appreciating local waterways under the slogan, Get to Know Your Guilford H2O. Most events are free, but some could require reservations. For more information, visit guilfordcreekweek.org. And on March 28th in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, Lunchbox Talk, the month of their ripening, North Carolina heritage foods through the year. At the North Carolina Botanical Garden, Georgianne Eubanks will talk about her new book, The Month of Their Ripening, published by UNC Press. Month by month, it focuses on ephemeral heritage foods in North Carolina, such as ramps in April and service berries in June. This is part of the Gardens Lunchbox Talk series. It lasts from 12 to 1 p.m. and it's free, but registration is required. For more information, call 919-962-0522. 919-962-0522. And now, from Jerry Baker's terrific garden tonics, here's a soil energizer elixir. No matter which vines or ground covers you're planning to grow, you'll always get great results if you perk up the soil before planting with this power-packed potion. The ingredients: 1 cup of regular So-Cola, not diet, 1 cup of dishwashing liquid, 1 cup of antiseptic mouthwash, and 1/4 teaspoon of instant tea granules. Those ingredients again: 1 can of beer, 1 cup of regular cola, not diet, 1 cup of dishwashing liquid, 1 cup of antiseptic mouthwash, and 1/4 teaspoon of instant tea granules. The instructions: mix these ingredients in a bucket and pour into a 20-gallon hose-end sprayer. Overspray the soil in your garden to the point of runoff, or just until small puddles start to form. Then let the area sit for at least 2 weeks to give it a chance to do its stuff. This recipe makes enough to cover 100 square feet of ground cover bed. And give them a jump start. Newly planted ground cover patches need a little help to get off to a great start. Here's a quick list of 3 things you can do to speed them along. Water thoroughly after planting, then spread a 1 to 2 inch deep layer of mulch between the plants. Number 2, plan on a regular weeding session once a week for the first year. And 3, to fill in bare patches, loosen the soil, then move wandering stems into that area and fasten them down with U-shaped pieces of wire. We've run out of time for today's episode of Out in the Garden. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you enjoyed it. I'm Cindy Fowler, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, TriangleReadingService.org. So long until the next time. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138.